Hello, everyone. Welcome to Meet a Maker. This week we are joined by co-host Faye. Welcome. Hello. And we are meeting Joe, the filament librarian. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
How are you?
It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
I am here.
I'm bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and ready to talk.
You look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Well done.
Thank you.
And very festive.
Oh my gosh, I'm loving the light. Very excited for this week. Yes.
Yep. So good. So good. You do lots of awesome stuff. So, yes. Let's dive in. Yeah. Let's dive in.
Right.
Absolutely. This is your chance. This is your chance to tell everyone, who are you? What do you do? What are you known for? Introduce us properly. Joe the Filament Librarian.
That's a lot.
I know. Right?
Okay. Who am I? What do I do? All right. I'm just going to start talking. And if I start rambling, just let me know. So my name is Joe Caulfield. I am commonly known by the Filament Librarian or It's the Joker online. You can find me basically anywhere by that username. I'm deliberately easy to find. In my day job, I'm an educator. I teach programming, the Python language specifically, the Django web framework, databases, systems design, etc., all that kind of fun stuff. And then online, like on Twitter and stuff and 3D printing, then I'm more or less known now as the Filament Librarian. So I have a bunch of different projects that kind of span the gamut of weird to wonderful and somewhere in between for a couple of them. But as far as 3D printing goes, then I run a filament color library. So that's really my thing. It started out with a simple desire and a simple pain point, which is the filament that I ordered that was kind of expensive did not arrive in the color that I thought it was going to be in. And that was very irritating because it's like I just spent $60 on this and I can't use it for the project that I bought it for, and that's really annoying. This is kind of exacerbated.
I feel like we've all been there. Yes.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Absolutely.
But this is exacerbated by the problem that I don't like to paint. I actually kind of loathe painting. Painting and I don't get along. It's messy. It's easy to screw up. I don't like it. And it's expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I can only really afford one expensive thing at a time, and painting and 3D printing, it's like, yeah. So I prefer to buy stuff in the colors that I'm going to print it, and then I can just be like, here, it's done. Magic. But yeah, bing, exactly. So when I bought this stuff and it wasn't in the colors that I wanted, I was like, well, how do I kind of get away from this happening in the future? So what I came up with was I have really two options. I can either only buy from one manufacturer and just trust that all of their pictures are taken the same way and that what looks like it will work on their website will actually work, like when I have those in hand. So like Protopasta or Paramount 3D, like they have wide ranges of color that I can use for different projects, but I'm essentially locking myself in to that specific vendor. And maybe I don't want to do that. If they ever go out of business, then I'm kind of screwed. So what's my other option? My other option is to make kind of a personal library. And that's what I ended up doing. So I actually have a swatch, a single piece of plastic. It's about this big. There we go. So every single swatch has two properties. One, it looks like this. And two, it is every single one has a tag on the back that is the manufacturer, the filament type, and the official color name of that swatch, of that color. So what I've done is for every filament that I have worked with ever, bar the first four, I have swatches for. Every filament that I've touched, I have swatches for. So at first, I started putting...
That is a lot, right? Like,
I'm so excited. I'm excited for this.
The answer is somewhere around 750 now.
Yeah, amazing.
So when I first started,
face.
I started putting them on rings because I thought, you know, how else am I going to like actually keep track of all of these colors? I need to put them on something that I can like flip through and get exactly the color that I want. Like, I really like this blue. This is Inland's Egyptian blue. And that way, if I'm looking for something, I can just kind of hold it up to my project and say, okay, this is really what I want. This is what I'm missing. This is what I need more of. But
go into this.
The problem with that is that only so many things fit on the ring, which meant that we had to get another ring, and then we had to get another ring, and eventually we just kind of ran out of space on to hold the rings. So now I have a box. In the box, this is all of the swatches that are indexed on the site. So there are another 500 or so swatches in here. Every single one of these is a different filament, and it's just an endless stream of plastic chips. And this is great, but actually finding things on it is not super fun. But thankfully, they only go into the box after they've been indexed. So when they're not indexed, I actually have these little custom-built trays that I made so that they can just kind of sit on here and stay here until I have a chance to index them. So actually, all of these colors are not yet on the site. These are all photographed. They're all ready to go. It's just they're not on the site yet. There are roughly 60 colors on one tray. I have three of these trays that are waiting to be indexed because sometimes I am slow. But
we've all got things to do.
That's what colors look like. At least these colors look like. So anyway, I started indexing these, and it's been a wild ride. I've worked with manufacturers. I've worked with a lot of individuals who have graciously donated some of their filament to me over the last almost 2 years now, which has been mind-blowingly amazing. I've gotten so many awesome colors and awesome filaments from all over the world now. But that's kind of what I do in 3D printing. Then alongside of that, in what other spare free time I have, I also run a small nonprofit that focuses on increasing accessibility on the internet that we can talk about later if you want. Otherwise, like, I'll just talk about that like literally all the time. And that's me in a nutshell. That's a very large nutshell, but that's me in a nutshell.
That is amazing.
I'm so sorry. I'm very busy being like just the nerdiest fangirl over here right now. I'm such a color nerd. This is a thing that I tell people all the time is that like I am very into color. I love color. Oh, we just say, where'd you go?
I'm here.
Your camera decided to check out there for a second. Take a break.
Yeah, it's a feature.
It's a feature.
No. Technology's here to help.
But I love color. I've always been just so fascinated and passionate about color. And I've always wanted to just physically own as much color as possible, which is why I have like large collections of colorful things like paints and markers and stuff like that. Filaments, obviously, like it's a huge range, but it's, and like you said, not always the color you think it is. Not always the color you think it is. So like what you're doing is both incredibly useful, like on a practical scale, but also very deeply satisfying.
Oh, it's incredibly satisfying. It's incredibly satisfying. It's actually a very different route for me, kind of, as far as color is concerned, because I spent almost a decade in television production work. So I fell in love with color actually in TV, in lighting specifically, because when you're working on like talk shows and stuff, you have to pick different colors to highlight different things on set. You want to show off somebody's hair. You want to have somebody's clothing like light up or reflect nicely, or we want to kind of isolate the subject from the background, and picking all of these different colors and all these different gels to make what you want happen on stage and have it like interesting was really like my moment. But like it doesn't work the same way. Like
no,
when you've got physical objects, physical objects don't really behave the same way that light does. But it turns out that thankfully it's just as interesting. So I lucked out.
Well, I love it. And it's so great. Like playing around on your site is awesome. And like, I love the way you can collect colors together into like a little collection and be like, oh, all these colors look so good together. And you know that they're all going to look good together because you can see them together. And you know that they've all been taken under similar photo conditions and all that sort of stuff. And it's very satisfying just sifting through all the colors and being like, ooh, this one's slightly greener. And this one, you know, and like, it's like, this is the perfect one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's deeply.
I love the collection functionality. Reason.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things that I built into the site, honestly. And I feel like not very many people use it.
Yeah. And it's so satisfying and fun.
It's okay.
Yeah. It's like window shopping almost. Yeah, you got to check it out, Faye, if you haven't yet.
It's yeah, awesome. I was going to say, I might have to start using reflections now because, like...
It's pretty great.
I could.
It's pretty great.
And I like that you don't have to make an account or anything. It just, like, generates a URL for you. Mm-hmm. Like, that is so cool. I'm like, oh, such clever programming. Like, yeah, you got...
Yeah,
you
that got was, some, that's that clever,
was a... Don't butter me up too much. That was a design decision very early on. Because, like, I've worked on a lot of different things that do require user accounts and, like, storing user information in a proper way and dealing with data protection and, like, all of the different legal requirements for it, especially when you get into international stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to deal with that. How can I do this in a way that I don't have to have user accounts?
Yeah.
And that was the answer. So every collection does have its own URL. And you can bookmark it the old school way, or you can share it, and it's everybody's going to have the exact same output because it's generated by the URL. It's just one of those things that just works, and I love it.
It's beautiful. It's so well done. Like, and I don't know much about code, but I look at that and I'm like, oh, that is so dishy. It's just, oh, perfect.
it's just not a thing that I think is utilized nearly enough, at least not anymore. And yeah, it is clever. Mm.
You make more money if you collect people's information.
That's probably the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, probably the thing.
Note, Billy likes blue. that's what a list of information Google has about.
Sell that to 30 mm-hmm. different companies. Yeah, exactly. So it's almost like your site's more ethical as well.
Hmm. Kind of.
I try. I try. I really do try. I have... one piece of tracking on it, exactly one. I use plausible.io. That is a privacy-first tracking solution. So basically, I see what country you came from and like what browser you're using, so like Chrome or Firefox or something like that. And then based on the screen resolution, do we think it's a desktop or a tablet or a phone or like that? Honestly, that's basically it. And I see what pages you hit.
Yeah.
No identifying information.
Yeah.
No identifying information whatsoever. And I love that because I don't need to know who you are. Like, right? I don't need to know that. I need to know, like, do we have a bunch of people coming from Germany? Do we have a bunch of people coming from the US? Like, is there somebody I need to talk to? Do I need to fix mobile? Like, that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can collect data in a non-intrusive fashion, you know, without collecting mm-hmm. anything. Identifying or anything that can be traced back and still have a nice juicy bowl of data to work with.
Yeah,
it's very, very, very good. I also like a good bowl of data.
Good bowl of non-personally identifiable data.
Exactly.
And use actionable
like
data.
Exactly. And it also helps that, you know, when I launched this, it was never designed to be a standalone product. It was never designed to be something that I could sell. This has always been, from the very beginning, a community tool that is hopefully paid for by the community. That's why I have, like, affiliate links and stuff like that when you can buy filament. But, like, that's it. It's not designed to make money. It's designed to maybe, hopefully, pay for itself. And that's it.
That's always nice. That's nice. If you can have something that can kind of, like, keep itself ticking over, that's not bad. It's not bad at all.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So you mentioned you obviously 3D printing because you do the 3D printing mm-hmm. and you mentioned Python and programming as well. Mm-hmm. Are those what I suppose what crafts or art forms or making type things have you done throughout the course of your life? A lot. Is that a lot? What are some of your favorites then?
Okay, making crafty things. My grandfather was a carpenter. So he actually worked for the state, which was really interesting. So he did things like replacing banisters and fixing, you know, like the big judge's desks in the courthouse for the state. He did all kinds of very careful, very well-used woodworking, furniture work. And I always thought that was like the coolest thing. I spent way too much time in his shop as a kid, just playing around with things under his careful eye. And I think that's really where I got the bug for making stuff. Like, I could take this medium, I could take wood, and I could do stuff with it. I could cut it apart, and I could put it back together, and I could make things. And that was really cool. And then kind of over the years, I went from carpentry, like kind of playing at carpentry, to actually working in a wood shop for a while. And then when I was at the wood shop, I actually encountered 3D printing for the first time. So in 2012, I got a job at my campus campus architecture school workshop. So I helped run the fabrication lab. And the fabrication lab had a 3D printer there that kind of defies rational explanation. It was called the Z-Corp 450. And if you're not familiar with those, it's a plastic powder printer. So it lays down a very thin layer of actual powder and then uses an inkjet head to print color and glue onto the layers. So you literally print a very high definition part in like 16 million colors on the first try.
And no support material required or whatever else.
And no support material required. You could do like the craziest thing. We had a brain gear that like you could turn any gear on it and the whole thing would just kind of rotate. It's so cool. But you could print that like on the first try if you really wanted to. And we had one of those and it was amazing. But that's kind of where I got into 3D printing, where I kind of saw what this technology was, because for the Z-Corp, like powder printing in general, it was very fragile. You could make the craziest things with it. The architecture kids would come in and they would ask us to run these jobs that were just mind-blowingly complicated. Like, you're looking at the printer and then you're looking at the wood shop down the hall, and it's like, how the hell would I even begin trying to replicate this in the shop? Like, yeah. I can't think about how these pieces would go together. Like, what? And when I kind of found out that was an option, that I could go into that as a consumer, like, after I graduated, because, of course, the Z-Corp, those are, like, 40 grand. Yeah. Those are really expensive, large machines. No way in hell I'm going to get one of those. But when I found out that I could do FDM printing just as for fun, wow, I can do this. I can play around with this. I can have some fun here. And that's kind of how I got into 3D printing. But I'm trying to think of anything else like really exciting. So when I was in the wood shop, I did also take a nice jaunt into instrument making. So I'm an amateur luthier, which is super great. I've made a couple of violins over the last few years.
Ah, is that the name for a violin maker, a luthier?
Yes, it's great fun. I've made a... the four string one that's really annoying. Little tiny guitar.
Viola? No, not a violin.
Ukulele.
Ukulele. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I made one of those. It's super annoying.
I couple of different instruments. I was thinking small violins. Yeah. I'm like, viola?
No. Definitely the ukulele. I made one of those. Like, I've made a couple of different instruments over the years. I've made stuff in lots of different materials. So I've done a lot of work with acrylic, like making both displays and instruments out of acrylic, and doing pretty much anything I can think of with lots and lots of acrylic, because it's really fun to work with. And then I don't even know really where to go
what
from
do you
there.
Make with your like, printers? What do you make with your printers apart from the chips? What do you print? Or is it all chips?
I mean, it's mostly chips. Not gonna lie, it's mostly chips. I print mostly functional things. Actually, I like function. I like function a lot more than I like form. So I print things that are useful to me as a human. For example, I hated all of the knobs that were in my kitchen, like drawers and cabinets. So I designed a new handle for them, and now all of the knobs in my kitchen are this nice rounded shape that doesn't catch on my pockets anymore, because that was really irritating.
That sounds very irritating.
So like, that's an option. Or exactly. I've printed all of the switch plates that are in this house. So I found, because the people who had this house before me, like, had this obsession with having a different type of switch plate in every room with a different theme. It'd be like a different color, and one would be horribly ornate, and then the rest would just not be. And like the kitchen all had gold switch plates, and the one in the hallway has like a little sculpture of like a little violin and some scroll work on it, and like it's cute, but it's all different and nothing matches. So I ripped all of it out. Say again?
Incongruous.
Yes. And so I ripped all of it out and I replaced it with this nice medium gray that blends in. Literally no one has noticed at all.
And that's what you
anyone who has visited this house in the last 2 years, no one has noticed that any of the things are 3D printed. Like, none of the plates are 3D printed. So, yeah, I did all of those in the same color, which was great. I've done some, like, little brackets for fencing outside. And then I'm also printing Alexander Chappell's little parts bins right now. I've been using some of my extra filament for that, which has been delightful.
Awesome. Ah, super cool.
No, I definitely feel you on the preferring the practical prints thing. Like that's always been one of my I think driving like desires, as well as to make stuff that has some sort of use, as opposed to something that just looks good on my shelf, which I think is perhaps the opposite of what people would potentially expect.
Same.
Sometimes when I need to get rid of filament, then I will print something fun. Like, there's no actual reason that I need to have this, but I do, because I had a lot of filament that I needed to get rid of. So, yeah.
Sometimes you need things to
cost a cat toy.
No, actually, it's just, it's called the Flexi Octopus, I think. It's on Thingiverse.
It could be used as a cat toy.
Oh, it could be used as a cat toy, yes. But if I give it to the cats, they will never let go, and I will be awoken at all hours of the night.
horrible rattling.
As it is, they ignore this one. So, like, that's good. Oh, you can't even see it. There we go.
Huge.
Everybody needs a big bench. Like, everybody needs a big benchy. This is hang on, I know what this is. This is Micro Center's Inland Green Transparent Pet G.
Why do you need a there database?
We go. Remember,
you can just recall it.
I made this like 2.5 years ago. I still remember.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I miss Micro Center. It's actually like one of the few things I miss about living in the US is having access to a Micro Center.
I would probably just die of sadness if I didn't have a Micro Center within somewhat reasonable driving distance. We have a Fry's here and it's awful.
Yeah,
so
not the same.
I just drive the 2 hours to the closest Micro Center.
I guess it's an electronic sort of seller, would you say, Joe? Micro Center. We have to explain to Billy.
Yes, I don't have Micro Center. I don't know Micro Center.
It's an electronic dealership, but like they've always been like one of the few places where you could actually buy like components for computers to build your own, and obviously slightly different things like 3D printers and stuff like that. So it's not like
they ever have Radio Shack in Australia.
No, we have one called J-Car, which sells components and stuff, but I don't like going there because they just kind of ignore me, and if I'm with my
that
partner,
like
they will just like talk to him, and even if he goes, I know nothing, I'm not really here, she's the one shopping, they will literally just like throughout the conversation just turn back to him and start talking to him, and it's just like, so I don't go there because it makes me angry.
Sorry,
and
that's
sad.
No,
that's fair. I just order everything from AliExpress.
that is also useful. I haven't had access to a Micro Center over a decade now. So I remember there being one in Houston, and it being both really big, like physically big, but always having like surprisingly good prices. I'd always go in and be like, that's well priced, I don't need this. But it's a good price.
But it's a good price.
Exactly. That's how I get you.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been there. I've done that. I know that dance.
Yes, you do. You understand. You definitely understand. I've completely lost track of where we were.
Good.
This is what happens when we get people who are really, really good talkers and really interesting. We just kind of end up having a natural conversation. Then at some point, I'm like, oh yeah, we had questions.
I'm okay with that. I'm here to chat. I got water. I'm good.
So actually, it's funny because I was gonna ask the next question on the thing, and honestly, I probably should, because it's a good question. But I also
fire
have,
away.
Like, lots of questions about filament.
We can just go that way.
We've got lots of time.
Because like
that's the best part. We have so much time.
Go with your gut, Faye.
So, like, you have 750 some odd different filaments.
Some odd. Tools. Yes.
Some odd, yes. This is a technical term.
You can get an exact number if you want.
I guesstimate is fine.
Getting an exact number. It's loading. Hang on. I have 783.
That's
your exact, yeah, nearly 800. I'm still very far away from John Greybeard 3D's collection. His collection is much larger than mine, but I'm getting there. One step at a time.
How large are you talking?
Last I heard, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of between 1300 and 1500.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
He's also been at this. He's been at this for longer than I have, though. Yeah. And he had quite a sizable collection when I started.
I'm going to assume that a large portion of those are no longer even available. Probably.
I have no idea.
Anyway,
to be completely honest. Anyway.
We don't care about his collection. We care about your collection because you are here with us right now. And like, this is so one of the things I'm wondering then is, surely not all of these filaments that you've gotten and tested are necessarily US centric. But I'm gonna guess,
that is true.
Guess that you've gotten filaments that are kind of from other parts of the world, because obviously a site that is only featuring U.S. filaments would only be useful to people located there. So you have
exactly
international filaments.
I do. I have actually. I just got in a cup. I got in a couple from. I just added Reflow Filament, which is a company in the Netherlands. And they were actually delightful to work with. They normally don't really ship to the US, and they don't really do samples. So they were super great to work with in getting me some filament to play with and to add to the site. But their stuff is super great. It prints wonderfully. And they have some great colors. But anyway, I've got some stuff from the Netherlands. And I also just got some stuff from Devil Design, which I am dying already to play with more of because it's amazing. But I think they're in the Czech Republic. And they, okay, like, you straight up can't buy Devil Design here in the US. You can't. No one sells it at all. Period. End of story. You can't. So I actually had to import it from England. And that's, my international collection is growing. Most of the things that I have are actually more U.S. centric because that's what I have available to me. But I also have partnered with Toby from the 3D Geeks app. He is in the Netherlands. That's where he's based. So we set up kind of this little where if you're in the EU, you can send filaments to him and then he'll box it all up and I help him get a big box of donations over to the US so that I can add them to the site. And that works really well.
That's cool. Yeah, that's really cool.
That kind of partnership is really useful because shipping is mad.
Shipping's not fun. So yeah, not fun.
Hi from Australia. I know all about shipping.
You know this very well.
Sometimes.
Very well.
Sometimes. You can buy a 3D printer and the shipping costs more than the printer. It's crazy.
God.
Yeah.
That's bonkers. Which actually makes me wonder now, are there any Australian like produced brands of filament?
Yeah, there are a few. There's Aurorum in Melbourne. There's Brad from Progressive 3D, not too far from me up in Brisbane. There's a couple more, I think, that I'm neglecting to remember. One of my friends, actually, Brody, is starting to make he's got a project in the works to set up a recycling, this recycled filament thing here, which is very exciting. I'll have to check that this is okay for me to be talking about. I will write a note and make sure before I release this video. But that's exciting.
Do you have some of these Australian filaments on the filament library?
As a matter of fact, I don't, because I was supposed to get them from Billy year.
This is
at
my
Nerf,
and I have yes.
And that didn't happen, so no, I actually don't have any COVID Australian filaments right now.
Not that Billy forgot. COVID. That's what
we're No. I am 100% blaming COVID for this, but I was actually supposed to, we were supposed to actually make that happen, it just didn't. So, you know, maybe 2 years from now, we'll see.
Fingers crossed. Maybe we'll meet
fingers crossed.
Somewhere else. Maybe
eventually
we will
host
a rap festival and people can come here who are healthy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
So what is your creative process like workflow wise? Like, what's your favorite part of the process? What does it look like when you like come up with an idea? How do you bring that into fruition? What is that like? It's a very broad question.
That is a tremendously broad question.
Sorry. What about your last big project?
General creative process is actually, I think, pretty simple overall. I think I've got it more or less down to an art, and it works like this. I come up with a grand idea, something that I'm very excited about, and it needs to happen immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I get about 40% of the way done with it, and then I have a grand idea that needs to happen, and I must do it. And then I get about 40% of the way through with it, and I have a grand idea.
Dang, are you me?
Like, the number of things that actually make it past the 40% mark, surprisingly small, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But like overall, I do learn a lot. Like I have so many half started projects, not even half finished, but half started projects that like I've lost count. But with every project that I do, I learn a little bit more, and I learn some other piece of tech that I didn't know, or I learn about some other thing that I didn't know about, or a vendor that I can buy things from, or just a tool, something. I learn something with everything, and I'm always trying to learn, like, in general. I like learning. So, like, that's important to me in general. So the act of not finishing something isn't really as bad as it seems, as long as I get something out of it. With this, with this being Filament Colors, I had some help. Like, I had some kind of moral support, which was really helpful, because there was at least one other person who was not my partner who knew that this was kind of in progress. And so That was actually really helpful, because I could just ping him every now and again and be like, hey, check out the work that I did. Hey, check this out. What do you think about this? Does this layout suck or what? And being able to have some additional feedback, you know, some extra voice into the process does help. Like, that's really useful to me, having somebody that I can bounce ideas off of, or just have kind of somebody that I can do check-ins with and be like, hey, yeah, I'm still working on this. Hey, yeah, it's a thing.
Extrinsic
I have not
motivation.
Fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So,
stability really helpful.
Yeah.
So helpful. It is so helpful. But along with that, the large majority of my projects are very long. They take forever to get to a place where either I'm happy with them or I can feel comfortable like deploying them. So, for example, Filament Colors took... Filament Colors took probably the better part of 3 to 4 months to write the very first version before I felt comfortable deploying it. And that was a lot of time just going through either ripping out things that I'd already made or kind of reworking it or getting new sources for ideas, because everything... Actually, this kind of leads me back to a good point here. Pretty much everything that I work on, I try and find real world examples of someone else doing either it or something similar. So I have something to kind of work against, because I am not good at many things. Like, I am good at some things, but I am not good at many more things. So if I have something to look at, if I have someone else's work to kind of base mine against, I have a much higher chance of being successful, at least in a moderate amount. So, for example, for filament colors, the homepage with the grid of all of the colors is a more or less direct clone of Google Photos, because I really like the way that it lists out all of the photos. And then it's you merge that with the classic, what is now classic, the Thingiverse search view. So all of the cards for different items. So I took the collection ability from Google Photos and the general layout from Thingiverse and kind of merged them into something that I felt comfortable using and looked right to me. Then the swatch detail page, where you're actually looking at the photos and stuff, that is an unholy mixture of eBay and Amazon. So both of those have the pictures on the left and the description on the right, and all of the information is either on the right or below. And that, like, just having that layout help is incredibly useful. Just having something that I can kind of look at and say, this is my starting point. I don't want to end up here. I need to start here. Just having something like that in the process in general, in the overall making process, so very helpful.
Yeah.
So helpful.
Totally agree. It's something I kind of talk about a lot, is that creativity isn't coming up with new ideas. It's taking existing stuff and mashing it together to form something new. Like, you take existing ideas and existing concepts and existing techniques or whatever else, and you do something new by combining them. So yeah, like I agree. It's a very good point that you're making there about
absolutely.
And I'm like, you know, we can't afford a whole bunch of user interface testing teams and everything else, but we can certainly leverage the existing work that's already out there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the worst thing, I think, the absolute worst thing that can happen to really anybody as a maker is when you have a really good idea of what you want and you don't have a way to adequately express to the medium you're working with, how do I get to what I see? How do I get this piece of wood to shape the way I want? How do I get this website to look the way I want? And that skill breakdown is often what makes us like give up on things and just put it down and then conveniently forget to come back. It happens to all of us. Like, it's a thing. It's somewhat sucky to talk about, but like, it happens to everybody. I absolutely guarantee it. So having something that you can kind of look at and say, I kind of get it. I kind of see how they got here. And through iteration, I can make my thing look closer to their thing. And then when I get there, I can move away because I already got there. I got to my checkpoint. So now I have something that I can work from that I'm comfortable with. And I know how we got there. And then the next time I need to get there, I know how I got there because I already did it.
Yep. 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 Definitely.
Basically in my brain, so.
You're welcome.
like are you, I was gonna say, to be fair, no, you're not my secret twin, but there's some haunting similarities. But honestly,
you're welcome.
You're slightly more sane, I think, than I am. Because I'm like, I'm gonna do this the way no one's done it before. I'm going to do it in a totally different way, and it's going to take me 6 months to figure it out, as opposed to doing it in a slightly more...
There is value in that. Okay, not so. To say that that's not the way to do it. I mean, yeah, it takes forever, and it's frustrating, and it's obnoxious, and it usually costs more. But, like, there is value also in forging your own path, in figuring out how to do it. Like, when I made my first acrylic violin, like, nobody'd done that before. Nobody'd made a clear plastic violin before out of acrylic sheets. So I had to figure that out, and that took me like a year and a half. The next one took like 48 hours, but the first one took a year and a half.
I feel that.
So yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
There is value in that. Again?
Sounds like video editing. The first one, yeah. You're like,
oh, yeah.
A month.
Oh, especially anything from Adobe.
Yeah. And then the next one, you're like, oh, that only took a week.
I came from Adobe into Resolve, which has node-based stuff, and it blew my mind. I'm like, how do I even, but it's higher in the list. Why is it not appearing on top? It like took me, I'm still in on that journey of like converting from layers to nodes, like Adobe to DaVinci, and it's still but I'm getting there. You've kind of touched on it a little bit. Oh, sorry, no, you go.
What? I was just gonna say, Joe, that your way of doing things is very smart.
Yes.
And it really makes a ton of sense. And honestly, I'm sitting here and I'm kind of like taking notes. This is good advice. That's it.
Definitely agree.
Appreciate that. It's just what works. I mean, it's just what's kind of worked for me as I've struggled through this kind of thing. Because I mean, I love building stuff with my hands, and I love building stuff with code. But I admittedly, I didn't have a great framework for it growing up, because my grandfather was a maker. My dad, I love my dad very much, but his idea of making is, if I can't fix it with a paperclip, it needs to go to a professional. And that's perfectly okay. Like, that is his idea of making stuff. But like, when I wanted to break apart something and see how it worked, like, I didn't really have a lot of support there, so I had to kind of figure it out for myself, and that's just kind of what worked for me.
That's really cool, though, that you came up with, like, it's clearly a system that works, so it's cool that you came to it.
Does something. I don't know if works is the right word for it, but it does something.
Well, you clearly enjoy it, at least.
It has accomplished a thing.
It has accomplished several things, actually.
This is true. Do you ever make any money from the things you make? This is kind of a weird question.
No. It's an important question. It's a very important question, because I'm on both sides of the double-edged sword there, actually, with making money related to what I do, because in open source software, like, nobody makes any money. And then in making stuff, nobody makes any money. And I do both of those things, and I don't make any money. But I will say that the affiliate links on Filament Colors have actually helped tremendously. When I launched it, my goal was that I just wanted it to pay for itself. And then I only need like $80 a year in order to pay for the server space for it. And this year I've actually made 180 in just affiliate links, which I was absolutely not expecting. So my next move immediately is then to take all of that and reinvest it in more filament for the site, because that's what it's for. Like, I don't want to make money off of it. Like, if I make money off of it, it won't be anywhere near as much fun. And then it's not like not worth it anymore, right? So the extra money that I make there, which as of this year is about 180-ish, 183, somewhere in there. And so that pays for the servers, and that pays for more filament for the site. It all gets reinvested back in. In the nonprofit side of things, I make negative money, actually. I pay for several of the things that my nonprofit has out of pocket still. And that's just kind of what happens in nonprofit land, because nobody makes any money. Like, yay.
It's called a nonprofit for a reason sometimes.
It is called a nonprofit for a reason. And then in like open source software land, I have made no money at all. No money from anything that I've released that's open source. So I don't make very much. If I could, I would leave kind of corporate America, and I would go into nonprofit world if I could. Like, if I could support myself and pay my bills and stuff, I absolutely would, because I adore it. I would love to work more in open source software because I adore it. The financial requirements just aren't there. So in answer to your question, I don't make much.
What I'm hearing is that we need to dismantle capitalism first.
Exactly.
Then
I blame capitalism.
You can do the stuff. Then you can do the
exactly. 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 So actually, I did forget that Filament Colors does actually have a Patreon as well. So technically, that brings in, I think, $10 a month. So that also goes back into more filament.
Awesome.
Who'd have guessed?
I'll pop a link to that in the description. So people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we can do that. I'll get you that.
Good, good, good. Bashed my elbow.
Careful. Don't let the desk bite you.
I'm so clumsy. You keep mentioning the not-for-profit, and I'm curious now. Tell us about it. What do you do?
Oh!
Just
I would love to talk about this. Okay, I promise I won't take too long. But also, this is like kind of the thing that I do that's not this. So, I run a small international nonprofit by the name of the Grafeus Group. If you're on Reddit, which I know at least one of you is, then then you may have seen in the comments underneath a post or two, you may have seen a comment that just lists out what's in the original submission, like as an image or something, and it starts with like image transcription and then whatever it is, and then an actual line-for-line explanation of what the image is. And then at the bottom, it says, I'm a human volunteer transcriber for Reddit, and you could be too. And it's a link to a subreddit called Transcribers for Reddit. So that is a project that I started with someone who is now an excellent friend of mine, a dude by the name of James in Maryland. And we started doing transcriptions kind of for fun. But basically what the nonprofit does, before I get too far, the nonprofit is that we run crowdsourced transcription for accessibility on the net. So if you have vision issues, primarily we work with the blind and the heavily dyslexic, but we've also done a lot of work with the deaf and just anybody who needs it. Honestly, so much of our work is pro bono, but we do a lot of specific requests for things. So if you have something that you can't access, because really, that's kind of what this is all about. If you have something you can't access, you bring that to us. We match you up with a volunteer, and then the volunteer creates a text version of that content, because everybody can absorb text. If you're blind, you have a screen reader. If you're deaf, you can read. Like there's always lots of options, especially like if you're dyslexic, there are specific fonts that help. But what works for you is specific to you. And the one thing that is common between everyone's setup is raw text. So we take whatever we can and we turn it into text. We have a little over 3,600 volunteers in all seven continents, including Antarctica. And wow. We've done a little over 110,000 posts for people over the last three and a half years now.
Wow. And is that like a platform or something where there's like, how does it work?
So the basic way that it works is we run a subreddit. It's called Transcribers of Reddit, one word, and it's effectively a job board. So you go and we partner up with different subreddits across Reddit. So we have, I think, 72 partners right now. And as things get posted to those subreddits, then we kind of grab them occasionally and we drop them back on our side and we say, hey, if you want to work on this, then just claim it and then do the work and we'll give you a point. And when you get a certain number of points, you rank up because you got to have a little bit of gamification in there.
Definitely.
And and then there are a couple of different ranks that you can get. And it's just kind of sitting and helping, and that's really what it's about. It's just you sit in front of your computer for like 5 to 10 minutes, sometimes longer if you really like it, and you get to help somebody make somebody's day better. For those who are on Reddit, then of course you get the karma that's attached to it, so you get a little bit of that extra bonus there. But mostly it's just about helping people. So we have the job board that's on the subreddit, and then eventually we found out that it was really kind of expensive to run. So we ended up forming a nonprofit in 2018 that runs the subreddit and runs the entire project. So the Discord that goes along with it, all of the servers are paid for by the nonprofit, and then we kind of just organize donations up there so that it's tax deductible and we get the experience of running a nonprofit. And it's just, it's super awesome. It's just so much fun.
That's so cool. What a beautiful thing. I love it.
I can talk about this literally all day.
And you light up when you talk about it. It's wonderful to see.
you're a true mensch. You're a true mensch, sir. That's wonderful.
What's a mensch?
It's so lovely. I have not. Oh, I am so sorry. Do you know what a mensch is, Joe?
I do, but I'll let you explain it.
Okay. So So it's Yiddish, actually. But in the United States, for some reason, Yiddish has become part of vernacular. And so a mensch is a truly good-hearted person.
Gotcha. Yes.
It's a person who is good in their core. Like, it's a good
that's
word.
A good
I like
word.
It.
Yeah, like, that's it, a good it, word.
Yeah. This is the thing with Yiddish is that it's usually quite specific. Like, it's got a specific meaning. It's a word that kind of encapsulates an idea, and that's why I like Yiddish.
That's so cool.
Arguably, the most famous Yiddish word that you probably know is schmuck.
Ah.
Yeah. Probably know what that means.
Yes. There you go. Yeah, I do.
You know what it means? That's Yiddish. Congratulations. You know some Yiddish.
Like, literally. But
I'm not explaining it if you don't know what it means, literally.
In context, I kind of get that it's, you know,
you can look, somewhat, you can
now
look that
I
one
feel
up
like
later.
I don't even want to say it out loud. Maybe I'll be wrong on the internet.
Maybe not. Though admittedly, as I say, not to get off track too much there, as I say, that I have an immense fondness for the word schmuck, if only because I did not know what it meant for a very long time when I was a child, but I heard it all the time, and so I said it because that's what you do when you're a kid—you repeat things. And
exactly.
And I had to be sat down by my uncle when I was like 12 or 13, and he was like, "You don't say that." And I was like, "Why?" And he was like, "I was like, because I thought it just meant like jerk, like I thought it was
yeah,
like a jerk.
This is me, okay." I'm wrong.
And my uncle was like, no, that's not what it means. And then he told me, and I was like,
it's a feature. All good.
I'm going to Google this and probably never use the word again by the sounds
I'll
of
play
it.
You later.
Okay. No, you'll probably use it. I'll use the crap out of it.
Oh man,
as a 12 year old, it was a little bit more scary, but yeah, Yiddish. I apologize, but yes, you are a mensch. Absolutely, this is so lovely, and I feel like I've only seen a little bit kind of firsthand the kind of effect that accessibility. And it's funny because I hadn't even thought of text as being something that would increase accessibility for the visually impaired, but you are absolutely correct. As soon as you said text to speech, I was like, oh, of course. Oh God, yes. Mm-hmm. Like text is what is necessary to make something accessible for the visually impaired. So like, yeah, that mm-hmm. sort of thing is actually really massive. And that's incredible. That's so
modern cool. Screen readers are amazing. Like they can read emojis just fine. Absolutely no problem with that. You can very easily differentiate between uppercase text. Like if somebody capitalizes a whole sentence, it's really easy to understand that somebody's done that. If they're trying to like emote something, like italics, bold, all kinds of stuff within text is really easy to explain. So just by creating the text versions, like we leave it up to the technology to do whatever the technology is, leave it up to the technology to kind of interpret that. And today's tech is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
So cool. Wow.
And like you said, it also helps deaf and people who are hard of hearing too. So like it's an all around positive. Like there's no negative. Except for maybe your wallet.
It is. And on Reddit, it actually has a really interesting side effect where it makes, once Google indexes the comments, it makes memes searchable and other stuff searchable through Google because it ends up grabbing the text that's in the comments. And then you get back to the original thread based on that transcription, which is something we did not plan. Yeah. And that was 100% accidental, but it works and it's awesome.
Terrible. Search. So that makes that's you're literally making Reddit search happen. Which is like a meme. Anyone who hasn't been on Reddit, it's like a meme how bad Reddit search is. So that's awesome.
It's gotten a lot better over the years, but it's still bad.
It's still trash.
Y'all are single-handedly like furthering that.
Yeah. Well done.
Exactly. That's, and it's wonderful.
It's good old
it's wonderful.
Gosh, just good old
you know what the next project y'all do is gonna have to be reviving the YouTube closed captioning community project, whatnot, whatever you want to call that.
The loss, the the loss of custom captions, of community captions, is hard to put into words, honestly. Like, I could also talk about this for a long time, but just the fact that it's gone is both horrifying and very sad, because it locks out so much of an audience that people don't think about. Like, personally, I watch videos with subtitles on basically 100% of the time, because I don't need it. Like, really, I'm partially deaf in both ears. I have about 20% hearing loss in both ears, but I don't need subtitles. Like, I can use them. I like them. I really like them, but I don't need it. But there are a lot of people who do need it. And also, community captions had the wonderful side effect of being able to add different languages to different videos. So if you had a maker who primarily in Spanish or something, then you could have English subtitles for very cheap, provided by the community because they like that person. Mm. And does that still exist? Technically, yes. Thanks, YouTube. But like, if you go through amara.org, then you can install, I think, I don't know off the top of my head, really. I think it's like an extension that you install that if somebody has created subtitles on amara.org, then you'll see those subtitles on the video. I'm not 100% sure how it works because I haven't really played with it, but I know that they made a partnership. Yeah, it's very roundabout. And you have to like sign up with Amara. And like, there's more steps that are required. So if you need subtitles, yeah, you can still technically get them, but it's not built in anymore. It's not a part of the platform anymore. And that automatically removes so much usability.
Yeah. I mean, so, I missed out on the community days by like, I wasn't making videos when it was a thing. And I've only become aware of it kind of after the fact. But what's available now is highly limited. It isn't terribly user friendly, and as a result, lots of people just don't—they don't even have the automatic, which are terrible. But they're better than nothing. And I've heard stories of the immense effort that kind of was put into the community project. And like, YouTuber Tom Scott has hundreds and hundreds of videos, and my understanding is that for a period of time, many of his videos had subtitles in like 6 or 7 languages because he had such a big fan base online that people were making subtitles for his videos. And so everyone got to enjoy them. And that was such a kind of beautiful thing. And like, it was like I was stumbling upon the remains of something. Like, I wasn't finding it. I was finding its bones. That was very sad. Mm-hmm. It would be so nice to have something like that exists again, because so many YouTube channels don't have any closed captioning at all. That is a shame. That is a shame. I know that I'm trying to make up for the shortcomings in my own channel just by doing stuff manually. But like, it does take time. It takes time to actually
takes a lot of time.
Generated captions and make them readable. And so whenever something takes effort, the likelihood that somebody's going to do it, is
exactly less. It drops tremendously.
You have to then really care, and not everyone does. So, like, so much about accessibility is making the accessibility accessible, so that
accessible
people who
exactly
need it will use it to provide the accessibility to other people. But when the accessibility tools, I guess, are not accessible themselves, or not easy to use, or free, or what have you, people don't use them. So what you're doing is certainly it's big.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it's growing wildly every year, and it blows my mind just how many people have joined, how many people have expressed thanks to our volunteers for the work that they've done. I admittedly don't get out into the trenches as much anymore, because I spend so much time kind of working on the back end and doing org related things, making sure that, you know, we have money over here and we've got money over here and that we're still bringing in things. You may have seen some of my tweets recently for Giving Tuesday. That's like the one time of year that I have to kind of put on my nonprofit hat and be like, hey, please give me money, which sucks. Like, I hate it. It is like the worst thing to just put yourself out there all day long and say, hey, I exist and you should give me money. And that sucks.
It's really hard.
Sucks. And it has gotten easier over the years because one of my friends, one of the people that I've met through running a nonprofit, told me once that as the CEO, as the person kind of in charge of asking for donations, it's my job to ask and it's your job to say no. And when we have that kind of, when it gets distilled down into that business relationship of it's my job and your job, and we both perform the job, and then in the event that you say yes, I have lots of things that I can tell you. But as long as there is that business relationship, then it does make it a little bit easier. Like, it's my job to ask, it's your job to say no. And that also does suck, but that's kind of what running a nonprofit looks like. So having, where I was going with that is that just having kind of all of this feedback, we actually have a channel in our Discord that a lot of our volunteers are in. Actually, probably a good third of our volunteers are in the Discord channel, which is also crazy, or Discord server. But we actually have a channel specifically set aside for testimonials. So if somebody comments back and they say, hey, that's awesome, I was really helped by this, then they can screenshot it and post it. And sometimes, like, just flip through it. Honestly, I do. I love it. Because it's so great to see that people are actually like getting use out of it. The most common use that we see actually is just when somebody won't, like, somebody's phone won't load an image, or if a piece of content is locked behind a firewall or like something like that, where either the video won't load or the image won't load or something like that, they can still scroll down and be a part of the conversation. Like, the transcriptions aren't designed to be a perfect copy. They can't be a perfect copy. A picture is worth 1,000 words, right? Well, usually we've only got like max 300 to throw at something before it gets really tedious, because that's not what we're here for. We're here for it because we need to participate in the conversation. We need enough context to know what's going on so that we can talk about it. That's all they're supposed to give.
On that note, seeing as like I've started recently making videos and I do just do the YouTube captions, what should I be adding to help people who are visually impaired or anything else understand context? Like, what should I be adding to the words that I'm saying, yeah, that helps generate that context, I suppose? Or if I'm writing, tags on images on my website or whatever else, yeah.
It depends on how much effort really you want to go to, because think that a lot of things, as with a lot of things, accessibility also does follow the 80-20 rule. So the first 20% of effort that you put in will get 80% of the way there, and the last 80% of effort that you put in will get you the last 20% of the way there. So just having captions, for one, is great. If they're not accurate, that's negative great, but if they're accurate, then you're good. So just starting, as Faye was saying, like, if you start with the auto-generated captions and then you edit them just to make sure that they're accurate, hang up job. Go you. You rock. That's a great start. A good example, I think, of this is actually Mr. Rogers. There's in an interview, Mr. Rogers once was asked why he says that he's going to feed the fish. In every episode, he goes and he feeds the fish tank. He puts some food in the fish tank. And somebody asked, why do you say that you're doing that? It's because they had a blind child write in, and he was very distressed because the child thought that after the fish tank was introduced, they were just leaving the fish to die because he never mentioned them. So even though, like, they visually showed Mr. Rogers feeding the fish every episode, There was no explanation or anything that was happening. So that's why Mr. Rogers always says, and then we're going to go feed the fish. Like, he always explains it. So if you have an action or something that is purely visual, sometimes it's a good idea to just like lightly narrate. Don't have to go into extreme detail, but like, hey, I'm doing this. I got this thing and it looks like this. Because it does, and I don't have a much better explanation than that, but it's my thing, and I'm going to do stuff with it. Like, that's a great that's a great place to start. It can kind of work its way naturally into your method of presentation because it is what you're presenting. So instead of just presenting what you're doing, it's presenting what you're doing and how you're doing it. Like, it's just a slight shift in how you approach it. And so there's not a lot of changes that have to be made for a large amount of impact. As far as subtitles go, you may find it. I'm sorry?
That's really useful. Mm. Like, that's really useful.
Yeah. I'm like taking notes.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
I try and help. But like, as far as
subtitles, it's not actually a massive thing. It's a small thing that you can add in that makes a huge
difference. Yeah, just so like changing the wording slightly so when small. You're explaining stuff. Yeah. This is doable. Very doable.
Then as far as like subtitles go, like some people find that editing the existing subtitles is too tedious and it's not very fun. You might try just writing your own. There are programs that you can download that allow you very fine control of the video, and it shows you like how many syllables are on this screen. So it's like from this time period to this time period, put on this much, and like it'll show you in different colors. Like, hey, this may be a little too wordy for this screen, or maybe this is just perfect because the amount of subtitles that needs to be on each screen is actually like way smaller than it feels like, because you got to be able to account for how fast people can read.
Yeah,
I've actually found a free-ish software that is actually very intuitive and very smart. Like, it's got a good AI in it. It's called Descript. Like description. Descript.
I'm actually not familiar with that.
So my understanding is that the first 3 hours of transcription are free, and after that you pay per word or per second or something like that, but it's not actually very expensive. It's actually quite cheap, but the software itself is very user-friendly. It's got a great UI. It's free to download. It absolutely blows the YouTube auto-generated subtitles out of the water. Like, so you can basically upload your video to it and it will auto-generate. It'll auto-populate subtitles or captions, and it does a bang-up job. You could probably just export that and it would be 90%. It would be 90% readable. Not just readable, but like, good, like, because it actually capitalizes words, it puts in punctuation, like, it's actually very good. And you get to then control in the settings things like how many characters per line, how many lines on the screen at a time. Like, there's a lot of customization options. There's nice useful tools. Like, there's a tool that will remove your ums and ahs.
I need that.
Oh gosh. I used that so heavily when I was captioning the live stream I did recently, because Jesus, live streams are terrible for captioning, because it's just one long run-on sentence for an hour. That's basically a live stream. But it's got some really useful tools. I have not yet even used half of the allotted free time, like, because most of my videos are 5 to 10 minutes, so like, they're not that bad. So I'm still using the free. I haven't gotten to the paid yet. You can edit entirely in there, and then you just export like an SRT or whatnot. I can't remember exactly the file it gives you, but it's one of the standard subtitle files. You then just import that into YouTube lines it up perfectly. You can still tweak it in the YouTube like editing system if you want to just like make sure that it's all lined up correctly, but It served me well the couple of times I've used it so far, and I actually really like it. Having used the YouTube system and gone,
yeah,
good.
But mostly, just the YouTube auto-generated ones are just really bad. So this gives you a much stronger base to work with, and it's actually decent software. Good UI, I like good UI. It's good.
I'll check that out.
We'll try and put a link about that in the description.
Yeah, because I feel as though I feel like now that I've even with my relatively small channel, the number of people who reached out to me to thank me when I mentioned that I was going to be putting captions into my videos was surprising. I did not expect that. So clearly the need is there. you know, the need is there. And so now I suddenly feel a lot more passionate about like getting other people to put captions on their videos and stuff like that. And it just feels like one of those things that, like you said, 20% effort for 80% payoff. That's worth it. That's definitely worthwhile. So I'm 100% worth it. Do the 80%. Like I'm going to do the whole thing and it's going to be perfect. And there's going to be punctuation like everywhere. And it's going to be grammatically correct. I need to work on that, but yeah, like if I find a tool that I think is useful for people, I'm absolutely going to be like, hey, yeah, there's this thing and should probably potentially look into it too. So that definitely what you're doing is, I very much, I salute you. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Appreciate that.
I am here for it.
I'll throw some links at Billy and we'll get some more info on that if you want to read about it.
In the description, I'll put them all there.
Yes.
So, well, what were you
gonna? I was literally gonna ask the exact same.
What's next for you, Joe? What's coming up in your world? We're so on the same wavelength.
What's next? Oh no.
What are you working on? I don't know. It could just be Christmas or whatever.
I'm working on a lot. I'm doing my level best to like ignore the existence of Christmas. Like,
that's fair.
Yeah. Aww. Not me, man. Not this year. In terms of like overall projects and stuff, I've actually been spending a lot of time working on the infrastructure and code for transcribers of Reddit. We're actually getting ready to deploy. Getting ready to replace damn near everything. And we've spent the last almost year and a half laying the groundwork for that. And so that actually should happen soon. TM. Yeah, cross your fingers now. But we are getting ready to replace almost everything, and that has been a ton of work. And that has like kind of been the primary thing that I've been focused on. Then in terms of this, what does this mean? In terms of filament colors, I've got probably about 200 filaments that are printed, indexed, or printed and photographed and just need to be uploaded and indexed. So that's a thing that needs to happen and is on my short list. There's some minor additions to the site that I'd like to make. I don't really know if I'm going to make them or not. Sometimes like I have a fun idea or somebody asks for something and it's like, yeah, that sounds like only a little bit of work, but it's not. And here's why. And I've had to scrap a good number of suggestions because of that. It's like, yeah, maybe if I worked full time on this, maybe I could, but no. And that's like, actually the biggest
full-time wage? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Then.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's actually the biggest reason why there is no real world color link on the site. So something that I probably should have talked about earlier, but we didn't get there, is that none of the colors on filamentcolors.xyz are actually relevant to the real world. None, not a one, not a whit.
They're
relevant to each other. That's the important part. So they're all photographed with the same camera, the same settings. They're all post-processed the exact same way. Minor corrections for things where the camera falls down, like purples, very hard to photograph. Certain teals, also very difficult to get right. So there is a little bit of manual color correction in there, but in general, it's all mapped to each other. So what we're looking for is that in this specific set of circumstances, do these different plastics look good together? That's what we care about. Because it's relevant, because it's relative, then if I have like three plastics that look great together on the site, your lighting is not going to be the same. Like, guaranteed, it's not. But the light which you view those three plastics will be the same for those three plastics when you have them in your hand. So they're still going to look good together.
Yes.
That's the important part. Yes. So if you have something like, if you're trying to match John Deere green or something, I can't help you. But if you're trying to, if you have a filament in hand and you're like, I need to make something that looks amazing with this, then that's what the site is designed for. And that's kind of what the problem I'm trying to solve.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, hey, all color really is always relative. So yeah.
John Deere is a tractor company.
Oh, I know. They made it here. It's okay. The green and yellow ones. I got it.
Okay.
Yes.
Green and yellow. You're good.
Is that another Americanism?
Thankfully, I pick up on most Americanisms. I because, you know,
admittedly,
one of America's largest exports is its culture, you know, like movies and film and stuff. So I know most of them. The other way, probably not so much. Not many Australian things make it to America. Crocodile Dundee is really inaccurate. So anyone who thinks they know Australia from Crocodile Dundee, you are wrong. yeah. We don't call them shrimp. Number one.
Oh gosh.
So, yeah.
All right. Anyway, well, I'm glad then. Yes. I'm glad you knew.
I do know John Deere. That was my little rant. Okay. Sorry. So, thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
No, you're good.
So anyway, in specific answer to your question,
yes.
I'm going to try and drag this back to on topic. In specific answer to your question, what's coming up next is I'm actually working on a display for Filament Colors that I am actually really, really excited about. I've been working on this for kind of on and off for almost a year, actually. Much more off than on, for the record. But it has been in progress for a long time. I was going to actually debut it at MRF, and then when MRF was canceled, it was just like, what is even the point? And so it just kind of sat in the background for a while. But I'm actually building a functional, mostly printed card catalog. So for those of you who are watching, if you're not familiar with a card catalog, it is the old school way of using a library. So you have a bunch of 3x5 index cards. If you're looking for like something by topic or by author or by title, then you have to shuffle through the cards to figure out where it is and what you're looking for and all that good stuff. So I am actually duplicating the entire color filament library in card catalog form so that I can take it to like a show and be like, look, this is super cool. Isn't this kind of awful to use?
This is why we have databases.
What if you had a site that had all of this and more? And that's kind of the point. Like it's mostly just because I can, but it's also just to kind of show off how you can use the website and what kind of things that the website can do and that kind of thing. But I put actually a lot of effort into it, and it's got like these really nice sliding drawers, and it's got like, it's all color matched, so it looks right, and it's really neat. I'm actually really, really pleased with it. But that is a long-term project that I'm really hoping to knock out by the next time I can go to a show, so that I can have it like on my little table and people can play around with it, because it will be accurate. Like it's pulling data from the database that the site uses, and we're just reformatting it for the cards. So you can actually find colors through the card catalog if you really want to. It's just not super easy to use. So
that's
the thing that I'm working on that I'm excited about.
Yeah, it's a really interesting little exercise that, like, I think I went to uni as a mature age student a couple of years ago, and was talking to the kids that came straight out of school, and they'd never experienced life without a mobile phone, you know, like without having internet, like a smartphone. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of blew my mind, like their perspective on the world. And they're like, the internet was a mistake. I'm like, you have no idea what it was like before the internet.
They have no idea.
And I'm thinking like, you're like card system, like making them rifle through it to try and find the information first, and then yeah, here's the app where you can just search that real easy. Yeah, it's like a really good exercise to like teach just how amazing that change was, because it was hard to even like, I couldn't even really explain how much the iPhone just changed the world, you know, and user experience and how we interact with technology and all of that. Like, say what you will about Apple, but that did really changed the world.
And, it did 100%. It did.
They can't remember a time before that. So it was like, yeah, like that exercise would really be so such a good one to do with people. I'm really keen to see how that goes.
I think it'd be so much fun because it's like, here is the card catalog. I want you to find Inland Yellow. You have three different ways of getting there. Good luck.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be fun. I think that'd be like an interactive thing that people can play with and like get their hands on. Like, that's what gets people learning and that's what gets people interested in things. I think it'll be great.
I can't wait. I hope I go to something that you're at so that I can see it in practice.
I cannot wait until it is done.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Well, then I guess then kind of the final thing is telling people where they can, I know you kind of mentioned at the beginning, but remind everyone where they can,
yes, I'm,
they can see these amazing things. Just
well, I'm everywhere.
Tell us again.
So, all right. On Twitter, I am most easily findable at Filament Colors. That is the best way to find me. I'm the Filament Librarian on Twitter. And I spend an inordinate amount of time there. I actually have several Twitter accounts, but that one is by far the most fun. So I definitely am logged into that one like way more than anything else. Because like it's basically just 3D printing and no politics, no local news, no nothing. It's just 3D printing and I love it. And that's honestly where I am most of the time. My username is It's the Joker, so if you find It's the Joker somewhere, it's probably me. That is actually probably the one thing that dates me the most, because that is actually from a forum handle that I was given, because my initials are JK, so it's be like it's the Joker, here he is, and that was a solid decade and a half ago. So I'm still It's the Joker because it's really easy to remember, and I'm basically everywhere there. If you're interested in checking out my Filament collection, it's also pretty easy to remember. It's just filamentcolors.xyz. Filamentcolors.xyz is, it's mostly XYZ because that was cheap and I didn't know if I was actually going to deploy it. And so it's XYZ. But that's where that is. You're absolutely welcome to explore that as much as you can. The code for it is entirely open source. If you want to see what makes it tick and how it functions, then you absolutely can do that. It's on GitHub, but there is a link to the source code on the site itself. It's in the footer. So the easiest way to get there, because you start at the library view, easiest way is just to click on a swatch and then scroll down. Don't scroll all the way through the library. Like, it'll take a while. So all of the code for that is online. It's a completely open. I do actually recommend, like, I think it's fun. Like, if you think it's fun, then you should go look, because I think it's fun and it's fun.
It is fun.
So if you're interested in nonprofit life, then you can check us out at grafaeus.org. That's G-R-A-F-E-A-S, grafaeus.org. It is a Greek word for scribe, actually. Fun fact for the day.
Love it.
Perfect. So Grafaeus is our nonprofit, and if you're interested in checking us out on Reddit, then it's just the subreddit is Transcribers of Reddit, one word, and you will get launched onto our job board, so that's pretty fun. Besides that, that's pretty much where you can find me. I'm not really active on YouTube or much else, so Twitter is the best place. The best place.
I'll put all of those in the description. So
yes, yeah. I will type all of those up laboriously and send them over.
Oh, thank you. Even better.
Laboriously.
Thank you. You have been such an absolute pleasure to have on, and it's been kind of interesting and cool to divert from making a little bit to talk about activism and you know, making accessibility and stuff like that. That's been really, really nice. So thank you so much for sharing that stuff with us and with the audience, because I think that's been a special treat.
You are tremendously welcome. I think it's tremendously important to have these conversations, and I know this is mostly about making. I do know, but I think it's really, really important to.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of making, because like, how are we going to make the coolest stuff without making sure that everyone can make? Like, that's a big place that we need to start, and that's a big thing that we need to look at. And I think that I think that just having everyone having access to something is the base piece of so much of what we do, which is also
it should be.
But it's also kind of dichotomy for me, actually, really, to be honest, because on one hand, I do a lot of work with the blind and other various visual disabilities and making sure that they have a much better life on like online, like doing what I can. And then I run a color library that is inherently inaccessible.
Because like, of color.
Because it's all color. Like, yes, I can attempt to describe yellow, but it's going to suck. So like I have the bare minimum essentially on that site, but like there's not much else that I...
That's tricky.
Yeah, how do I do that? So it's actually a really interesting problem that I try not to think about because I just get worried about it.
The feelings that the colors give people.
I do not have enough time in the day to write down all of the feelings that I get about different colors.
This is true. Yeah.
Take a while.
It would take a while. That is a dichotomy. There you go. It's interesting, though.
Very interesting.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your awesome stuff with us. It's been such a fascinating discussion, and I really appreciate your time. And I know it's getting late for you and Faye, so I am really, really appreciative of that as well. So
more late for her than me.
Yeah, Faye, you're pretty perky for like midnight or whatever it is now.
Yeah, midnight.
Sorry.
No, it's quite all right. It's been an absolute blast, and I'm so glad that I was able to join y'all. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming. Lovely. Well, we will see you on the internet, and yes, have a lovely evening.
Absolutely. The same to you.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah. See you, babe. I am loving making this series, and if you are too, please support me on Patreon so I can keep making more. Top supporters will appear in this list of legends. You can meet another maker here, and here's a video YouTube thinks you'll like. If you want to catch up with any of us, all our socials are in the description below. See you later!